Okay, morning everybody. Can you hear me all right? Yeah. Okay. I just first like to acknowledge my co-authors for this presentation, my postdoc Jinbin Hu, Jesse Poland's postdoc Kevin Wong, as well as Todd Mockler and Nadia Shakur, who lead the Terra Ref project. Today I'm going to be presenting on behalf of the TerraRef teams. These teams are building genome to phenome reference data sets in Sorghum. So the main project I'll be talking about today, funded by DOE ARPA-E, is the reference phenotyping platform for energy sorghum. And just one thing to note to begin with, if I can get this, as we've heard about today, the interdisciplinary team is really critically important, especially for this reference data. So we have a number of genome biologists, machine learning, data scientists, breeders, ag engineers, physiologists. On a newer Gates Foundation funded project that takes this genome to phenome reference approach to international sorghum. We have some of the same team members, then adding on breeders in national programs and from international breeding programs. On both these projects, I would say maybe in contrast to what we saw from Aaron and from Bill, where that was kind of a from the ground up approach from the breeding programs. The TerraRef project, I think, has been more of a technology-driven, technology-first approach, where those of us who are involved in genetics and breeding are now trying to link that to the breeding programs. I would say the question that TerraRef is trying to answer is how crop biology and crop improvement will be transformed through access to really literally trillions of times more field data. So the things that we do in our programs as crop scientists that we do weekly, what does that look like when those are done hourly? The things that we do daily, what does it look like when those can be done in seconds? Meters going to millimeters, red, green, blue going to full hyperspectral data. So for the talk today, I'll have kind of two sections. The bulk of the talk will be an overview of the TerraRef project and TerraRef data products. And here I'm trying to answer the question, what is unique about TerraRef as a reference platform? We've heard already today about another Terra project, Bill Rooney's project. There's many really great high throughput phenotyping projects ongoing. What's different about this as a reference? So one aspect is the scale of the data. We're looking at crop science with thousands of terabytes of data. Another is the scope of the data, looking at multi-platform and multi-sensor data sets. There's integration of those data sets. We're doing a lot of sensor fusion to create unique derived data sets from multiple sensors. And then finally, a major issue is data accessibility. Well, we're on a very aggressive data release schedule, and our first beta release will be just in about 3 weeks. Towards the end of the talk, I'll transition over to a case study in my program at KSU. Try to answer the question, what crop biology are we doing at KSU to validate the platform? And this will be focused on unmanned aerial systems, phenotyping of diverse sorghum germplasm, and this is where I'll be looking specifically at the genetic dissection of growth, development, and stress responses in diverse sorghum. And then I'll just conclude by saying how we're starting to apply these approaches that we're developing on TerraRef to climate smart agriculture and diverse germplasm, in line with the theme of this session. So TerraRef uses a range of data collection platforms, and the reason we do this is that each of these platforms have different strengths, and they really complement each other. So TerraRef, the core of TerraRef is a massive gantry-based field scanning platform, and we complement that with tractor-based phenotyping, environmental sensors, and UAV, and we're looking to connect it to satellite data as well. This is the gantry field scanner. There'll be a picture in a moment with a human for scale, but this is a shipping container right here. This is the type of gantry that you might see that moves around shipping containers at a port. This is the sensor box in the middle. It has a hyperspectral camera, thermal infrared, 3D laser, LiDAR, high-resolution stereo, RGB, a fluorescence photosystem 2 camera, and a whole suite of complementary environmental sensors. The frequency of data collection is variable, and it'll depend on the individual sensor and how we're running the system. There's a full-time postdoc there just to manage the gantry along with a team of agronomists and engineers. This is in Maricopa. Some of you may have visited last year at the crop science meeting. So we aim to acquire sensor information daily. There is downtime for maintenance. There's really substantial maintenance on this thing. We're expecting to acquire about 7 petabytes of data. So that's a stack of, you know, external hard drives, what, like about, you know, 5,000 of your, you know, external hard drives, over 4 years of ARPA-E funding. The maximum data generation rate is about 10 terabytes a day when everything's running at full capacity. So for data collection, some of the data collection is a part of what we call full field scans that are regularly scheduled about 3 times a week. And so these will be a compromise among the sensors for their for speed at which it's moving through the field, for height, for the timing. We also have what we call field campaigns. So some data collection is done on these field campaigns where we've optimized the speed, height, and timing for particular sensors. I'll say a little bit more about that. So here's an overview of the field campaigns that we did this season. So our early season field campaign was on plant architecture. So this is from emergence through canopy closure. And here we're really focusing on the 3D laser and the stereo RGB. So making sure that we have high temporal resolution for those sensors. And the other aspect of the field campaigns is really heavy manual validation. So here it was on leaf stem and canopy measurements that Maria Newcomb led in Maricopa. Our mid-season campaign was on stomatal regulation, especially in response to vapor pressure deficit, limited transpiration. Here the timing was, this was the 2 weeks after canopy closure. And here we really focused on the thermal infrared camera, where it really benefits from collecting data at around solar noon or just after, and collecting data very quickly, so we have a comparable data set for thermal infrared. Here the manual validation was handheld and fixed infrared thermometers. Our late season campaign was on stress effects of photosynthesis. So this was for mature plants, and we applied drought stress, and we maintained some at well watered. The focal sensors here were the hyperspectral and the fluorescence photosystem 2 camera, and the manual validation here was LICOR photosynthesis measurements. And I just note here for scale, this is a person here, and here's the gantry system. Okay, so I'll spend a little bit of time showing some example data sets out of the TerraRef platform, and again, these will be released in a few weeks. So here's an example from the 3D laser scanner. In this case, whoops, got a little ahead of ourselves here. There we go. Okay, so here, in this case, this was a grain sorghum population that was under the gantry at this point. We have 3D point clouds with millimeter spatial resolution, and the machine learning team is extracting plant architecture traits like leaf angle and shape, panicle size, stem parameters. And here is a reconstruction of two different plots through the growing season of the 3D structure. I won't show any examples of this, but what the machine learning team is working on now is the type of classification and quantification that I already talked about in the first presentation. And so they have like a panicle classification algorithm now working. Here's an example of hyperspectral data. So there's two headwall hyperspectral cameras, one that goes down to all the way down to the UV range, goes up through visible, and another on that goes up to shortwave infrared. Depending on the wavelength that you're looking at, the wavelength, the band resolution is between 1 and 10 nanometers. And so these hyperspectral images, they form these data cubes. You have your X and Y coordinate for the portion of the plot you're looking at, and then you have several hundred wavelength bands with separate images. Another major area we're looking at is data fusion. So here, this is from a full field scan of the 3D laser where the FLIR was layered on, and I'll show a zoomed in version of this later, but you can zoom into individual plants here on this data set. Here again, the we're looking in the end to fuse across platforms with the rationale being that different platforms have different strengths for timing or resolution of data that we want to integrate. Right now, we're focusing a lot on fusion within the gantry platform across different sensors. Let's play this again. I'll show you an example. See, this blue, this is cool and this is hot, and this is an example of why we need the field campaigns. This is from a full field scan, so the scan was done slow enough for the slowest sensor. Therefore, this data was collected in the morning, and this was collected in the afternoon. So they're not comparable. So this is why we have the field campaigns. When Canopy is closed, we whip through the field as fast as possible, collecting it all just after solar noon. So we have comparable data for thermal imaging. And again, and this is also why at KSU, for instance, we use thermal imaging off a drone. So there's limitations to all these platforms, and we're developing data sets that kind of get around those limitations. Okay, so here's an example of fusion of the 3D laser data with color RGB. So this is a slice of the field where the RGB data has been layered onto a 3D skeleton. And here's an example, similarly, of layering the thermal infrared data on that 3D reconstruction. This is something, for my program, we're really excited about because we're very interested in mapping, detecting the genetic basis of somatal regulation and water use in sorghum. And anyone who's worked with these knows that handheld measurements are really susceptible to influences of leaf angle and other aspects of canopy architecture, or how much soil is showing through. And so by layering the thermal infrared data onto the actual plant canopy, we can begin to account for some of those other factors that are changing temperature that aren't related to stomatal regulation in order to isolate the effect of stomatal regulation. Another major area that we work on in the project is developing genomic diversity reference data to match with the phenomic data, genome to phenome. So we're focused on the genome resequencing of the biomass association panel, and this just shows a genetic population structure diagram of the biomass association panel. It's mostly photoperiod sensitive high biomass sorghum germplasm, and that's why we're using it on the energy project. But most of these are actually African sorghum land races, so that provides a link to our Gates TerraRef sorghum genomics toolkit project. We've gone now from 500,000 genotyping by sequencing SNPs that we originally published on to 5 million SNPs plus hundreds of thousands of indels that Jeremy Schmutz's group developed for this panel. There's huge, huge amounts of data, as you can see. The traits that we as biologists or breeders would use are a very small part of the data. The sensor, the raw sensor data and derived sensor data is getting into many thousands of terabytes. And so to handle that, we have a dedicated data science team led by David LeBauer, who are taking in these streams of raw data and metadata from KSU, from the LemniTech field scanner, and from the indoor LemniTech system at Danforth. And they've developed basically the back end to store and manage this data. And then they have extractors, which are the image analytics or other or G2P analyses that in an automated way go into the databases and spit things out to traits and eventually predictions. And so the key thing for us is just thinking about where users of the data will interact with this system. So if you're a crop biologist, not on the TerraRef team, but who wants to use this, the trait database is BettyDB. That's where you'll be able to go and get traits. If you're a computer scientist and you want to provide new algorithms, to extract the data from the extract the trait data from the image data, that would become an extractor. And if you're a data scientist who wants to test new methods of handling data, you can access the raw data and use that to populate your own databases. Okay, and so there is detailed documentation available now on the data products from Terra. At terraref.org/data, and we'll have our beta release in a few weeks. What will be in here is unprocessed instrument data at full resolution. There'll be processed data that's been geo-referenced and trimmed and calibrated. There'll be corrected data where we've tried to deal with some of these shadow effects and soil effects that have been mentioned before. They will be the simple plant trait data, now distilling it all down, along with the manual phenotyping data that was collected in Maricopa and also at KSU. And there'll be raw and processed genomic and genotype data. So I'm going to shift gears now a little bit and talk about what we've been doing at KSU as a part of the TerraRef team. So we're involved in the design of the experiments under the gantry, and we'll be doing the G2P analysis for the gantry data. But at KSU, we've been running field experiments as well. So here at KSU, we did field-based high-throughput phenotyping, predominantly with UAV, also with tractor in the early season. The germplasm we're using is biomass by forage recombinant inbred lines that Bill Rooney developed, which are more representative of what you'd see in a breeding program, at least the early stages of a breeding program. Then we also had the biomass association panel that's more representative of pre-breeding material, very diverse. And for me, this is a really important part because this is our pathway for technology transfer. Some discovery from the field gantry, maybe some new hyperspectral index or some new new gene for somatoregulation. If it's going to make it to the breeding program, the breeding programs, it's going to have to do that through UAS system, most likely. So we're kind of we're a big part of the route of technology transfer to breeding programs. And so this, I'll talk to you about the KSU field experiment from last year. My team's harvesting as we speak for this year. And so this is work led by my postdoc, Shenbin Hu, and collaborating with Kevin Wong, Jesse Poland's postdoc. And so this was done in this humid continental environment, kind of the western edge of the Corn Belt at K-State. And this was done in two complete blocks, four-row plots, roughly square. There's questions about changing the design. This is something that we did. We have sub-blocks with 10% augmentation using commercial checks for the augmentation biomass type and a high biomass forage type. There was last year over 800 plots. This takes about a day to walk through once the plants are fully grown, just because it's so so large. It's just to physically walk through without collecting data, it takes about a day. So last year we had 28 UAV flights, and in the early season, while the plants were short enough, we had three tractor runs for validation, and I believe eight manual height measurements. I'll just note another thing about the design. These empty plots are empty on purpose for ground control points, like Aaron mentioned in his presentation. Our workhorse now for the UAS program is DJI Matrice and a MicaSense Red Edge, so just commercial standard products. MicaSense is a five-band red, green, blue, Red Edge, and near-infrared. A really key thing for us for research and development purposes is we have a full-time UAS technician who was a former airline mechanic and UAS pilot, and if only for like regulatory issues, it was really critical to keep us flying, and also to get a lot very rapid feedback as the plants were growing so quickly that the flight plans had to change sometimes every week in order to optimize the height of the flight. So after flights, Kevin would take over. He does 3D models with standard photogrammetry packages, Photoscan and Agisoft. He'll generate the multi-band ortho mosaic photo to get the vegetation indices and generate the digital surface models, and then extract plot level data. Actually, the previous slide had the plot boundaries that were inferred off the data. And so here's an example of NDVI and the digital surface model. Here now we have a genome-wide association study using the UAS data. So on the x-axis we have the 10 chromosomes of sorghum. Each point represents now one of 5 million SNP markers. And on the y-axis, we have the strength of the association between the marker alleles and height. And now it's cycling through over time, over the growing season. So now we're 60 days into the growing season. It'll cycle back at around 100 or 120 here. So what you can see is throughout the growing season, okay, now it's cycled back. Okay, so not a lot of heritability at the start of the season when they're very small. As the season goes, you see QTL arising, meaning they're important at that time, and then disappearing. And at the end of the season, you see the classical dwarfing loci come to prominence in controlling the plant height. And so we're starting to look at modeling based on this. And so we started with just a simple logistic growth model that has P-naught, which roughly says when the rapid growth starts, R, which says how quickly rapid growth occurs, and K, that says basically where rapid growth stops. And so this allows us to map genetic control of different growth parameters. Just note, when Zhenbin did this analysis, he actually only used the dates used in red. The blue dates roughly marks when lodging really started, and this is one of those areas where we really need the help of the machine learning people to start distinguishing plant height that's affected by lodging and a plant height that's not affected by lodging. Our hypothesis here was the growth stages are under independent genetic control. And so here again is three Manhattan plots. Now for each of those growth parameters, so this is the timing of the initial growth, this is the speed of the maximal growth, and this is how high it grows to. Maybe if we work back from the last one, you see your classical dwarfing loci in determining that maximal height, and whereas earlier on those classical dwarfing loci are not involved, and you see novel loci that are controlling that rapid phase of growth or that initial growth phase. Okay, so to conclude, just want to mention a few ways that we're looking to apply high throughput phenotyping to characterizing diverse plant genetic resources in our climate smart breeding efforts. We have a molecular breeding program that's targeting chilling tolerance. Sorghum as a tropical plant does not have chilling tolerance. And so when we started this project, like everyone else does, we scored seedling vigor on a 0 to 5 rating, and as we've heard, it's very, very difficult to do that without subjectivity, and also just a typical kind of challenge here. You want to do this exactly when you're setting up your main summer nursery, right? And so I think one of the major reasons we don't have cold tolerance yet in sorghum is just because you need to do the phenotyping right when you're trying to get ready for your main nursery. So in half an hour, we can do what, with the UAV now, what would take 2 days to do scoring. This is red edge imagery, and you can clearly see the difference between the chilling susceptible and the chilling tolerant lines here. And this is 4K video. You can see individual lesions from the UAV due to chilling. And so this is done with diverse Chinese and Ethiopian germplasm. In Africa, in West Africa, we've been working for several years with programs in Senegal and Niger, increasing their phenotyping capacity. And this stress too, this is a post-flowering stress experiment that they're, in this case, planting, that used 600 diverse West African lines. So really large-scale managed stress phenotyping that they're now doing. But this is definitely a case where phenotyping is a major bottleneck, even there where they have access to inexpensive labor. So now the Gates Project is allowing us to layer on UAV phenotyping onto the managed stress field phenotyping resources that we've developed for those West African breeding programs. Okay, with that, I'd just like to acknowledge the people in my team that contributed to the data I presented today, as well as our close collaborators in the Poland lab, Kevin Wong, I mentioned as well, and Daljeet Singh is in the audience,
also say Jeff White, co-PI, and Bill Rooney, co-PI, are in the audience as well to answer questions.
Thank you.